Sprouts is a weekly program produced in collaboration with community radio stations and independent producers across the country, bringing you local radio productions of national interest. The program is coordinated and distributed by Pacifica Radio, thanks to Michael Yoshida at Satellite Operations. If you or someone at your station has a radio production that you wish to rebroadcast on Sprouts to showcase it nationally, contact our air traffic controller, Ursula Rudenberg, at ursula@pacifica.org. That's ursula@pacifica.org. I'm Meg Greenberg, the producer for this week. Thank you for listening, and see you next week on Sprouts.
And coming up next on Free Radio, it's Bathurst Pier's Broadsides. Stay tuned for special treatment of the Downtown Commission's hearing of a week ago on the parking lot panic law, plus more from the new leaf planter, We Chain Off the Sidewalk, procedures that are being used there. Stay tuned. You're tuned to 101.1 FM, freakradio.org.
I'm a roving blade of many a trade, I've embraced trade and all trades, and if you want to know me name, call me Jack on for trade. I've often heard of a London town, the pride of every nation. At 21, it's here I come to try for a situation. In Covent Garden I began, and there I was a porter. Me and the boss, we soon fell out, which made the acquaintance shorter. Then I drove a number 46 from Waterloo to Wembley, where I became an engineer on aeroplane assembly. In Charlotte Street I was a chef, in step degree a tailor, but very soon they laid us off, so I became a sailor. In Rotherhithe, the stevedore, in the grazing road, a grinder. On Hampstead Heath, I lost me wife, it's sad, but I never did find her. In Downing Street, I was a lord. In Denmark Street, I made songs. In every street and all streets, with my banjo, I played songs. Harley Street, I was a quack in Turnham Green, a teacher. On Highbury Hill, a halfback, and on Primrose Hill, a preacher. In Gower Street, I'd furniture with fleas and bugs, I sold it. In Leicester Square, a big white card I offered stood to hold it. By London Bridge, I'd lodging beds for all who made their way there. For London is of high renown, and Scotsmen often stay there. I'm a roving blade of many a trade, I've every trade and all trades, and if you want to know me name, call me Jack of all trades. I've tried me hand at everything, from herring bones to hat pegs, but I can raise me head and say I've never been a blackleg.
And welcome to Bathurst Pier's Broadsides. That was a cut from Roy Bailey's past masters called Streets of London. Of course, blackleg is a scab or someone who busts a strike. On the line with us, we have Wanda Knight of the Coalition for a Community Dialogue for Against Racism, Poverty, Injustice, and who knows what else. Hi, Wanda.
Hi, it's Wanda Conaway Knight.
I'm sorry. You remind me, and I'll keep correcting myself.
Thank
Wanda
you very
Conaway
much,
Knight. And Wanda C., if I may call you, what happened last night at the City Council Chambers? I understand that was the third in a series of forums around the county, around the issues of discrimination, police misconduct, things of that sort?
Yeah, around equality and justice and around poverty, racism, about housing, employment, health care, law office relations. And we spoke about a lot of law office relations, especially an incident that happened about a month ago when some young black boys had supposedly had robbed some man of his medical marijuana, and the sheriff was going around arresting and handcuffing every young black man that they seen with dreads. And a lady spoke about it, and she said how they were in the shop and they just came and arrested were handcuffed for a young black man and had him sitting on the curb for about 2 hours.
Where was this?
In Santa Cruz. I don't know exactly where.
Uh-huh.
And I asked her, how long ago was this? She said about a month ago.
And
I've heard about this from other people.
And I take it the actual victims didn't show up to testify, but just she did, right?
Yes, she did.
Uh-huh.
You know, a lot of people are afraid to come forward. I mean, once you've been treated that way, why would you come forward? And a young man was talking about how he was handcuffed, and a young Latino guy, well, he's Latino and Irish, and how he was questioned. They searched his car, they handcuffed him, made him sit on the side of the curb for 15 minutes and didn't find anything. And he wasn't doing anything wrong. And he didn't know how to go about complaining. And I told him that I myself have 4 complaints against 2 sheriffs at the Board of Supervisors that I have been putting these complaints in.
Now, this all happened in the Santa Cruz City Council chambers from 6:30 to 9:30 last night, right?
Well, 7. It was 7. Not 7.
7 to 9 or 7 to 9,
yeah.
Something like that. I know I missed it, and I apologize for missing it. I had actually put it on my calendar, but I don't know. My calendar is written in invisible ink.
Well, the next one will be held, I believe it's August 24th, at the Presbyterian Church on Beach Street in Watsonville.
And when is that going to be? What time, do you know?
No, I don't. I'm sorry. I don't have the papers with me. I'm in a friend's car.
Yeah, well, hopefully you'll put that on. I know you've been doing a better job, the organization, in mentioning it to Indie Bay. In fact, they did a main story, Santa Cruz Indie Media, or IndieBay.org/Santa Cruz, did a, you know, kind of a full-length feature on the coalition.
Hey, Robert, can you hang on real quick, please?
Yeah, sure.
I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're talking with Wanda Knight, who has been working with this group for, gosh, I don't know, half a year at least, putting together these large community forums where people come and speak out. I've expressed some skepticism because I don't know what procedures they have for following up on any of this and how much of it is, you know, a campaign gambit for people like Tony Madrigal and Simba Kenyatta who are leading it. And, you know, it's happening around election season. Not that that's necessarily a bad thing. If there were some real actions planned and some real constituencies mobilized. It's just these people, Madrigal has been in office for 4 years and has done zilch to mobilize these constituencies.
Hello, Robert.
Hi, Wanda. You're back.
I'm sorry. It was my son in line.
Right. No, it's okay. So can you talk now? How are you doing?
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, so how many people showed up at the city council chambers? We should say this wasn't a city council meeting. This was just the use of the council chambers for a public gathering.
Yes.
How many folks would you ask?
Brandon? I'm sorry. Yeah.
So how many people do you estimate came to it?
I don't know. I don't know. The seats are almost all filled. I don't know if it has capacity. It says it holds 115 people.
Uh-huh.
So I don't know quite how many people were there.
And you said you saw you spotted a few council members, you know, lurching about or.
Yeah, and Fred Keeley was there.
Fred Keeley, former supervisor, I guess former assemblyman.
Yeah.
He's one of the politicians who always waves at me on the street, and I tend to think he actually is genuinely friendly, unlike Madrigal, who always has his arm extended for a handshake, even if...
Well, he was pretty friendly last night, and also Michael Watkins, the superintendent of the school district.
Uh-huh.
He was there, and he was the keynote speaker, and he talked about how it is...
Who, Madrigal or Watkins? Who was the keynote speaker?
Huh?
Who was the keynote speaker?
Michael Watkins.
Okay, what
did he have? The superintendent of the Board of Education.
What did he say? What was the essence of his remarks?
I could hardly hear you. You're fading in now.
Oh, I say, what was the essence of his remarks?
He was talking about what diversity meant.
Diversity.
Exactly what that meant, the definition of that, and, you know, equality and justice and equality is that we're all supposed to... We're all diverse, but we're all supposed to have equality.
Yeah.
Well, in other words, he, you know, talked about the schools, talked about the system, and about how we have to change it, you know, and not just the people who are the victims, but the people who tolerate it, have to change, have to have a mindset, something to that line.
It makes me a little nervous when I hear diversity rather than strengthening institutional procedures for dealing with police misconduct, although no such procedures really exist. You talk about diversity, it's a kind of a weak-kneed kind of phrase that avoids the real issue, it seems like to me. It's a way of trying to coax people who don't want to be critical of the police into being involved without really coming out about discussing what the real issue is.
Well, that's what they were trying to do last night, and there's so many words. I can't quote exactly what everybody said, but basically what you're saying is exactly what we're trying to do. We're trying to get it out. I want people to know that these things happen and that they need to have changes. And so when we have the one, after we have the fourth one, the one that will be held in October, then we're going to try to come up with some solutions about dealing with these issues.
You know, I mean, again, as I said to you, we had a conversation about this about two weeks ago. It seems to me the solutions are really, you know, quite evident. You get at least one or two attorneys who are really interested in this issue. You file a massive lawsuit dealing with selective enforcement or at least dealing with civil rights violations around one of these cases. And if you haven't got that to start with, what the hell have you got? You got a bunch of people chattering around election time who are trying to make themselves look good in the eyes of the community. I mean, that's my concern.
Well, maybe, Robert, maybe with all this that we're putting on, maybe we can get somebody who is generally concerned about this, an attorney who will help us. And I do have a number of an attorney, but I'm going to see what happens with all this because I myself have been trying to get a class action suit for over 10 years.
I know.
And
I've
maybe
been
this will bring more people. Yeah, you've been with me through this whole ordeal.
And I've been watching, we've been trying to do it around homeless issues, too, without a lot of success. And I guess it just seems to me that if you have so many people involved, you know, you at least can do things like teach people how to use the Public Records Act. You can teach people, you know, how to file complaints. You can do protests at the police station. You can issue informational bulletins. You can form a cop watch. All these have indeed been tried in the past and has had limited some success in at least publicizing and perhaps reining in some kinds of police misconduct.
But well, maybe this will come out of it. You know, because
I did it all on my own.
I did everything
on my own. I know, but you've been talking,
right,
and you're a very militant worker, Wanda, on these issues. But if a militant like you can't get shit going after 6 months with a group of people like this, how useful is the group?
Well, maybe after all this happens, we can, because more people are coming forward. I'm networking with more
Why
people.
Maybe?
I have more people. Well, we don't know, Robert. We'll see what happens.
Why are you waiting? Why is it we'll see what happens? You've heard accounts in three different public forums. I should also ask if before we go any further, this was videotaped, right, for future community TV rebroadcast? Do you know when that's going to happen?
No, I don't know. But at least we have North County, which was us. Mid County was Live Oak, and then we have, Santa Cruz is Mid County. Now we're going to have South County. And maybe with all four of these counties and being involved and with all the 21 nonprofits we're involved with, that would help us out. But there's my son, Robert. Oh, I got to call him back, Robert.
I'll let you go. Wanda, thanks very much for the
You're
update.
You're welcome. Okay.
And I appreciate Wanda's, you know, being willing to take some critical response from my side. I don't know. I mean, I don't know what's going on behind the scenes. Perhaps committees from the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom and the UN Association and Community Action Board and a bunch of other groups that are involved with this, or they were in the one meeting I went to, are actually going to do something about this now in terms of the complaints they're getting now about these issues rather than sending them to the compassionate ears of Captain Steve Clark, who's the Internal Affairs revolving file guy who deals with complaints against the police department. I admit Clark, I have a personal problem with Clark because he assaulted me in a false arrest at city council in 2006, you know, the only officer ever has in Santa Cruz. But I'm really concerned about the procedures that the internal affairs, the police department uses. And I think that if you get a bunch of people together who are willing to put the kind of energy they're putting into getting the stories, if you don't do anything with them other than, well, I guess publicizing them certainly is a good thing, but if you don't take any action after that or while these things are happening, what's the good? Anyway, you're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. I'm Robert Norris, and the name of our show, of course, is Bathrobes, Pierres, Broadsides. We go until 6:15. Actually, we're at 6:15. We're going to go until 8, maybe, if we're lucky. Actually, that's highly likely without FCC intervention, earthquakes, or heart attacks. I hope or let's last. Actually, we had some problems last show with internet problems. We had a frayed cord here, and it took us off the air. And I really apologize to people who tried to tune into the show, which is archived later. The archive was corrupted, and we're going to try to repost a second version of the archive probably tomorrow or the next day when a reposter feels well enough to do it. And hopefully that'll happen if we can get the reposter to get him the material he needs and then get him to post it. That'll be great. It was a really good show on Sunday. We actually didn't begin until 10. The show normally starts at 9:30 in the morning, went till 2 o'clock, and a lot of interviews I played from the streets, which I think are revealing and interesting. And my thanks to Sergeant Michael Harms, who I have vigorous disagreements with, and frankly, not a lot of respect for his position on the force. I got to be candid about this, because not really primarily with what he does, but what he allows to happen, and he gives backup to essentially bad policies from the top, stonewalling of commissions that are looking for information from the police department, like the downtown commission. We're going to be hearing that today. The downtown commission asked for information about the parking lot trespass law, the 15-minute law, that almost uniquely among all California cities, Santa Cruz has this very repressive law pushed by Mayor Ryan Coonerty, bookshop worker, manager, family participant. It's hard to say what Ryan is with respect to that, but it's a family business. And he's also a lawyer and a teacher of constitutional law at both UCSC and Cabrillo. So here's a guy who should know better, and he's actually doing worse, which says something about him personally, which isn't really relevant. I mean, no. We're not in the business of saving souls on this program, and everybody makes their own choices. But when it has public policy implications, it's important. When people like this get into positions of power and start selling out our civil liberties right and left while claiming to be in favor of our civil liberties, sort of like the Democratic Party, you know, we are in big trouble. And people in Santa Cruz hopefully are savvy enough to know this. I know a lot of people listen to this show have heard me haranguing about it long enough to be aware that, for me, anyway, it's an issue, and perhaps for a number of other people in Santa Cruz, it's an issue. So here's another quick cut from Roy Bailey. I'm going to then do a follow-up on the last interview we had on Sunday, which was, again, with Sergeant Harms. Sergeant Harms and I were both at the New Leaf Market. I'll tell you more about it after this next song.
Mr. Punch and Judy Man, bring me back the childhood land of summer. Down the lanes of foggy chimneys in the little seaside town drives the east wind like a dragon, strewing leaves of ragged brown. Winter's planting icicles along the barren shore, and the Punch and Judy man is gone forever. Mr. Punch and Judy man, bring me back the childhood land of summer. In the meadows by the river where the elm and willow stand, silver mist is creeping down to lullaby the sleeping land. Through the bare and blackened branches, swallows fly no more, and the Punch and Judy man is gone forever. Mr. Punch and Judy man, bring me back the childhood land of summer. Slot machines and penny arcades jingle jangle on the pier, gone the sound of children laughing,
fading with the dying years. Through the town he wanders in the misty autumn haze, and the Punch and Judy man is gone forever. Mr. Punch and Judy man, bring me back the childhood land of summer. Punchinello, Punchinello, where have you and Judy gone? Gone to join the swelling ranks of things that we look back upon. Memories can conjure you from dreams of summer days, and the Punch and Judy man is gone forever. Mr. Punch and Judy man, bring me back the childhood land of summer. Down the lanes of foggy chimneys, in the little seaside town, drives the east wind like a dragon, strewing leaves of ragged brown. Winter's planting icicles along the barren shore, and the Punch and Judy man is gone forever. Mr. Punch and Judy man, bring me back the childhood land of summer.
And that was Mr. Punch and Judy man, or Punch and Judy man. Again, Roy Bailey singing it, probably from about 30 years ago. This is a collection of real old songs, which I picked up in a kind of a new version. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. The call-in number here, which I haven't mentioned, and my apologies for that, is 831-427-3772, 427-3772. And I welcome your calls. Got my eye on the... I got my ears open, and there should be a ring in the studio if you call in. So feel free to do that. Here's, again, going back to a, or I should say continuing, from July 21st. This is Sergeant Harms was standing on the sidewalk with me. We were near the New Leaf Market area. I think it was about 4:30 in the afternoon. And this area has been closed off at night with a chain, which is... prompted a lot of concern from some of us, particularly from me. We have a caller. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hey, Robert. I just clarified something that was mentioned earlier about the coalition meeting last night.
Oh, yeah, go ahead.
They were taping the meeting. However, they let us know in the beginning of the meeting that it will not be broadcast. And what they were doing was basically taping it for later use, because what they plan to do is take a collection of the tapes of the meetings and review them later and come up with an action plan. So just wanted to clear it up for folks, and don't bother looking for it on community TV.
Oh, I appreciate that. Yeah, I mean, that's kind of sad, actually, because the police, you know, actually who are invited to these meetings, in fact, I invited the police chief of Scotts Valley at the request of the organizing group, although I didn't think I really had a lot of doubts about it, but I wondered about its efficacy. Police are invited, so they know what people are saying, and it's a public meeting. So the idea that it shouldn't be broadcast to me is really kind of defeats the whole purpose. But
yeah, it was a public meeting, but it was noted that there was some anonymity that was put forth. In other words, one of the things that they reviewed in the beginning, sort of ground rules, were that anything that was said in the room was not to be attached to a name. So I think what they were trying to do was open up people to be able to talk without feeling unsafe. That was the idea that they put across. They did mention about inviting several police officers, people in the police, and it was returned that none of them received the invitations, although they mentioned that...
Well, none of them received the invitations, or none of them accepted the invitations?
They mentioned that they got word back that none of them received the invitations. In other words, they were told that, oh, we didn't receive any invitation, even though they had, I think, left calls and I think sent some in emails. So, yeah, it was...
So the police officers
were definitely a non-police event.
They're not answering their phone messages or reading their emails, or else it's disappearing into a black hole or something's
right.
happening.
Black hole.
Yeah. This is John.
Just wanted to clear that up for you.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you very much, and thanks for the update. So, yeah, it's really hard, I guess it kind of sounds gimmicky, you claim, I know if you really want to have a private group on this issue, then you have a private group. You invite people to come in a meeting where there is real confidence. The press is not invited. The public is not even invited. In fact, complaints are confidential, and you can do that if you want. I, of course, generally use an opposite approach. I put stuff on the air publicly for people to talk about, for police officers to respond to, for the community to know about, and hopefully to encourage other people to come forward and tell about similar experiences and to deter police from doing this kind of stuff. And I think, if I had the power that this group has, and this group has got dozens of people working with it, and, significant people who have access to city council staff like Tony Madrigal, people who are running for city council, people who are, in institutional positions of some bureaucratic power, with different organizations, and could give you the punch to actually pursue issues, unless, of course, you don't want to offend the police department, And that way, then you have to kind of use its protective cover. Oh, it's all a bunch of diversity. Oh, we're gonna look at all this over until October, and then we'll come up with some solutions. If you're going to propose real solutions, you propose them in the middle of an election campaign, where people are going to be able to vote on them and discuss them, and other people are going to force to take stands on them. And I don't know that you have to do a lot of research on this issue. You either believe, based upon the testimony you get, that there is an institutional problem, or you don't. And, of course, I believe there's a very serious institutional problem in power imbalance in this community around the police department and how they treat the community and how they insulate themselves from the community in terms of the information they give, the attitudes they have, even to simple things like Public Records Act requests, their arrogance in front of commissions, and their power at the city council to humiliate a city council member like Tony Madrigal, who, as I said before, is a major weak sister and has never had really shit to say about police misconduct in any meaningful way, even though for years he was on the police review board. I got to tell you, Tony, I'd love to have you sit down and change your position, but I haven't seen you do it. And when you do it, I'll be the first to commend you. Although I got to tell you, if you do it in the middle of an election campaign, I get highly skeptical. Ditto with Simba Kenyatta. Simba was here last election in 2006 talking what a wonderful, what he was going to do. And I said, I want to know what you're going to do the day after the election. And, of course, the answer was nothing. And for a year and a half, as far as I know, and Simba perhaps can contradict me, and I'd be happy to, have him talk about this on the air, there was no actions around police misconduct that I was aware of whatsoever. But come election time, oh boy, we're back on the trail again. So, anyway, here is me talking to Sergeant Harms at the New Leaf Market area. I'm not in the store, we're on the sidewalk. And again, what's happened at New Leaf is they've chained off the fence at night after 8:30 or 9. Being not New Leaf, but apparently the redevelopment agency, that's what I learned through research this week. This is an arrogant, anti-homeless decision made by a city agency, which has done a number of similar actions in the past, ranging from blasting classical music out of the host center next to the Del Mar Theater at such a volume that the merchants across the street complain when we try to have them cited for unreasonable noise. Of course, the citations disappeared. Nobody wants to hold the redevelopment agency or their little pawns who are the hosts responsible for this kind of stuff. They actually tried to remove me from the host center when I made that complaint. And I told them, I stood my ground. I said, this is a public building. I'm here. I'm not leaving. I'm filing a complaint, and I actually got a cop to take a complaint, which he then summarily dismissed later on his own authority, which police officers have the right to do, apparently. And so here's Sergeant Harms and I chatting, and you've heard a little of this, those of you who are listening at the end of last Sunday's show, but I picked it up from close to the end, so we're going to go into some new material. Here we go.
Yeah, cool, sure. And it doesn't bother you. See, that's another concern I have. You know, I mean, so
that's the difference here. Yes. There are people who are using the public space. There are 6, 7, 8 people sitting down, and they're about to be. You're about to.
On the rail, thanks.
You're about to threaten them with trespass.
Right.
Once the chain goes up.
That's not even what I'm here for.
I'm not saying that, but once the chain goes up, you'll be in a position to say, in essence, get out of there, leave the public space, or else trespass arrest may be forthcoming.
Mm-hmm. Could happen.
Right. So I think that is outrageous. And unfortunately, that tarnishes you and your reputation as an individual who probably has a lot of good intentions on the police force.
Go ahead.
Just an average, everyday Joe, just like you, trying to get by in a difficult world.
Yeah. However, you're enforcing a lot of rules on people and creating a lot of friction that I'm not doing. And I'm an everyday Joe, but I'm not doing that. I'm trying to defend their rights. You, on the other hand, are trying to restrict them. That's the problem.
No, I'm just here to follow the laws that have been created by the people.
No. You're here to enforce codes that have been created by the city council under special pressure for particular business interests. That's what you're doing. You are an agent of the business interest, not the community in this situation. That's my concern.
The community are the people who support these businesses. So the community at large are the ones that actually...
The community is everyone, not just the people who support the businesses. I mean, I support some of the businesses. Well, that's fine. But I don't support policies that criminalize people on the streets for using public spaces. And I hope you wouldn't either.
Well, a true public space, no, I would never do that.
You took the last one?
Well, really? Unfortunately, this is a true public space. And it, along with other spaces...
There have been agreements that have been made that make it no longer a public space.
And what we're talking about here is the sidewalk area in front of New Leaf Market that during the day is occupied by tables and fenced off with a green iron rot fence, which was actually created back in 2002 specifically to eliminate a large seating area that people were gathering in by folks that the redevelopment agency considered unsavory, and therefore they were going to move them along by suddenly leasing out the area to private interests and then putting the community in a position where they couldn't use that area unless they were customers or unless the people who were running the businesses wanted to lose money by opening it up as a non-customer area. And in fact, ironically, that is what's happened. Much of the day, when there aren't customers there, the businesses Alfresco's and Cafe Campesino do allow people to use those chairs and tables to their credit. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hi, is this Robert?
It is.
This is Linda Jolly, your friend, the activist in Redwood City.
Oh, hey, Linda. Well, we're talking about the New Leaf chain here and playing some tape. That's the chain on the sidewalk in front of New Leaf Market at night that stops half the sidewalk from being used for the public space that it was intended as. And actually, the city council guaranteed it as back in 2002, but then apparently it was secretly and changed by the redevelopment agency in March of this year. But welcome anyway. What news have you got from, what did you say, Menlo Park?
I'm in Menlo Park and Redwood City, and you remember from our previous shows that they tried to bust me for the crime of sleeping, and I'm a landscaper, not a homeless person. So I actually got a lawyer and got pretty riled up and fought back and won my case, as you know.
Now, has that had any implications for other people sleeping in their vehicles, or have you heard that they're continuing the same policies?
Well, it has massive implications, and I think they might have lightened up a little bit because I think I let them know that I will sue them if they disturb my naps again.
What about not just you, Linda? I'm talking about other people in the area, and
yeah.
that, That's why I know you told me. Wait a minute. You told me in the past that you were unable to really get out there and make a lot of contacts because you're a working person and you're not really, you know, you don't have a lot of money, you don't have a lot of time. But really, I got to tell you, my interest is in the broader homeless community in your area, not just your case. I'm glad you won your case, but I want to know its implications. Are the cops going after other people still, or do you know?
Oh, they're still going after them. Just a little while after that, a woman and her husband were taking a nap in a vehicle because they had just gotten back together after a stormy separation, and they were just lying. They fell asleep in the car, and they received a big citation on grounds of living and sleeping. It's all gotten to the point. The persecution is at a level where, you know, if you go to the drugstore late at night to get something and fall asleep in your car after taking your your prescription meds, you better be carrying the deed to your house, or they might give you $200
fine. Let me understand this, Linda. Are you saying that you're only allowed to sleep in your car if you have proof of residence somewhere?
Well, if you sleep in your car, they're going to accuse you of living in your car, if you do it at night, that is. They are looking specifically for people who live in their vehicles, and there are thousands of them.
Now, have you made a Public Records Act request to find out how many of these citations have been issued in the last year?
I wanted to, but I fell short of time. I'm on the lower end of the scale in making a living
No need to go through that. I mean, I understand that. But that's what you need. You need to get some information about what, you know, we have one other example. You just gave me one of someone, a couple that was ticketed in their car for sleeping. So I ask you, with respect to your case, did you just win it simply on the basis of, you know, you weren't shown to be guilty beyond a reasonable doubt? Or did you win it on the basis of the fact that, you know, you showed that even though you were guilty, it was a necessity? What basis did you use to win the case?
There are multiple legal grounds for fighting back.
On what basis did you win your case?
Multiple legal grounds, like unfair targeting of homeless people, the city's effort is unconstitutional based on the 14th Amendment, and also we have the right to travel. We have the right to work. We have the right to live. A homeless person should always put his constitutional right to life up front. And we need some brainy lawyers and rich people who will help people fight against this.
I'm using you as the brain here, and because you don't have the lawyers. What I'm wondering is, do you have the actual wording of the Menlo Park statute?
Yes, I do, I can quote it to you almost verbatim.
Cool. Do so.
It's the Redwood City Ordinance.
Sorry, Redwood City.
20.227. The ordinance says it shall be unlawful for any person to use his vehicle as living or sleeping quarters unless that vehicle is housed in a legally operated motor home or trailer park. And this applies to both private and public property. So if you're living on the streets or anywhere in your vehicle, even if you're parked in a friend's driveway or in his backyard even, it's illegal for you to use your vehicle as housing, which just creates a pretty darn tight situation.
It is.
For
now,
people,
Redwood City has approximately how many people?
In Redwood City?
Yeah.
I really don't know what the population is. It's a huge city.
I think it's a pretty big city. It's open 100,000 and 200,000 people now. Something like
that. Yeah, I think so.
I mean,
yeah.
I'm not sure. I can look it up. But I mean,
I personally know. I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
I personally know dozens of people who are scared to death of what the government is doing to persecute the poor people who have no place to go.
Now, are these mainly people who have vehicles to live in, or people who have no vehicles and get persecuted through another law?
They include both. This particular ordinance pertains to vehicles, but the cops also persecute anyone who tries to live in the bushes.
And what law do they use for that?
They don't seem to be imposing fines on those people because those people have nothing to lose, but if you have a vehicle, you can have something to lose so that they can fine you.
Well, what basis did they tell the person, you know, that they're contacting them? Police officers have to have a crime they're looking into, and the crime has to be violating some statute. So what statute are people who are outside vehicles violating, as far as you know?
You know, I was never able to find it.
I want you to go find it. Go find it.
Cops like to make up these things. I went into the law library and tried to find out what some of their codes are concerning things like, say, living in a garage or living in the bushes. I looked through the municipal code and I couldn't find anything. So I think that, you know,
have you talked to a police officer about what he does when he finds a homeless person he wants to move along? That could be one way to find it out.
Yeah, that would be good to talk to them. But
not that you would necessarily get reliable information, but it might be helpful. We're talking with Linda Jolly of Menlo Park and Redwood City, specifically talking about Redwood City laws criminalize homeless people. Now, this particular case that you won, I'm going to go back to this. You mentioned a lot of considerations you raise. What judge found you not guilty and why, or is that what happened? Did a judge find you not guilty?
Yes, Judge Stephen Hall reversed the decision of the lower court, which was traffic court. Traffic court originally found me guilty, and that was under Commissioner Kathleen McKenna.
By the way, here's a tip. Always disqualify the traffic referee. We always do it in Santa Cruz. They're no good. They're just fine generators generally. And you get, although not much more, some more protections in higher court. Not a lot, but a little.
Yeah, well, it was traffic court was real screwed up. I mean, it was a circus.
Yeah, I was in traffic court myself 2 days ago in a case of a guy who urinated in public, and I got I heard the most preposterous stuff from referee or Commissioner Kim Basket, or you know, Basket Case Basket, as I sometimes unkindly call her. But Linda, again, this judge Stephen Hall, who overturned the traffic referee or commissioner or whatever she was, on what basis did he overturn the decision?
Well, I submitted a written brief, which I wrote myself, citing multiple legal grounds, everything from the fact that I do have a residence to the fact that they are persecuting people unequally. That is, they persecute the homeless, but the big rig drivers live in their vehicles and don't get persecuted, as you know. So it runs a whole gamut, and my brief is in the public domain if anybody wants a copy.
Good. How do you find it? What do you Google for?
Just email me. You have my email address, and I can repeat it anytime.
Repeat it now.
Or and also my phone number. My email address is lindajolly9@yahoo.com. I'll spell that. LindaJolley9@yahoo.com. Can I get my phone number?
Sure.
650-630-3021.
So that's 650-630-3021. Linda Jolly, JOLLEY9@yahoo.com. And for those who didn't get those numbers, if you call me on this relatively easier to remember number, 423-HUFF, H-U-F-F, I'll give it to you. So again, so Linda, which of the arguments did Judge Hall find persuasive? Did he issue a written opinion? Did he give a verbal
he didn't
statement?
Say. They're very brief and curt. He just sent a written verdict saying reversed.
Oh, so you don't really know, right? He wasn't clear as to why he said it. He didn't, you know.
But if anybody wants a copy of my brief, it might help them fight their case.
Right. Yeah.
You know,
do you know anything about Hall? Is this a function of his compassionate nature? Is it the brilliance of your brief? Is it the fact that, I don't know, his mother was homeless for a short period of time? You know, what do we have any clue as to? Because see, the problem is when he doesn't give a written opinion or a spoken opinion, or he doesn't talk to you in court when you make your arguments, you have no way of knowing which grounds he considers relevant.
I have to say that the system in general is not very helpful. It's heavily biased in favor of those who benefit from the system.
Well, I know that. No, I know that, Linda. You know, I know, but I also know that, for example, when you look at the Jones case in Los Angeles and why two of the three judges made the historic finding that the L.A. law against sitting, sleeping, and lying was unconstitutional, did so on the on a very specific basis. They did so not on the basis of the right to travel, not on the basis of equal protection of the laws, not on the basis of selective enforcement, but on the basis of cruel and unusual punishment, a very particular finding. And that then becomes the basis for the rest of us to appeal, because then we know what they're doing. If we don't know what Judge Hall did in your case, we're not going to be appealing to Judge Hall. We're in Santa Cruz. But other people in your area won't really know what to do. And I guess they can try every argument in the book that you tried, and they can try to contact you to get your brief, which I encourage you to email me, by the way, rnorris3@hotmail.com. Email it to me. And I'll try and, I'll have it available. We'll post it on the website, the Huff website. Huff has a website, huffsantacruz.org, for those who would like to look into these issues locally.
Okay. I used the Jones case. I cited the Jones case in my brief, and it's a powerful argument in that there's this very strong analogy in between this car sleeping problem and the Jones case. In that, in the Jones case, the people sleeping on the sidewalks had no place to go. The city shelters were full, and therefore it was cruel and unusual punishment to jail them for sleeping on the sidewalk.
Right, but in fact, as legal scholars know, that's a hard argument to make, because homeless people are not considered a protected class. You usually only consider cruel and unusual punishment after someone's convicted of a crime, not when a police officer approaches you, even though in some cases, like the Robinson decision, which talked about you can't go after alcoholics anymore because they're alcoholic. You have to have them engaged in some kind of a crime or behavior. Or actually, it was a drug addict, not an alcoholic. Drug addiction itself is not a crime. It's a status. But still, that has not been broadly accepted. And in fact, that was the reason the ACLU developed Cold Feet in Los Angeles and settled rather than trying to make the Jones precedent hold, which would have made all of us, frankly, I would have protected the entire 9 states and required the police to back off all over the place, which unfortunately they don't have to do because the ACLU of L.A. settled. They settled because they were nervous that that their decision would be reversed by a higher panel. So I'm asking you all this because we know about the Jones decision. We've talked about it ad infinitum on this show.
Pointing out that the car sleeping thing is an exact parallel.
Right.
That these people have no other place to go. The government does not allow them to exist in any other place.
Right.
And yet it's citing them for turning to the only shelter that they have.
Right, of course. And I mean, this is the situation in Santa Cruz and numerous other innumerable. In fact, in most communities, I guess I read today a story about how Palo Alto does not have a sleeping ban, which is very strange. If you go online, you'll find an interesting story. In fact, if you listen to my show, have you been listening to my show? You have access to a computer or not?
We can't get your show on this side of the mountain.
You can if you go to www.freakradio.org. That's where you get it. You got to get to a computer.
Is that 101 FM?
No, it's freakradio.org. We stream at freakradio.org, and we broadcast at 101.1 FM. But the 101.1 FM you can only get if you're in the Santa Cruz area. The rest, however, the stream you can get anywhere in the world. So if you get that stream, you'll be able to hear the show. And more and also, if you want to hear shows later that you want to hear yourself on the show, we're archived in another website, the huffsantacruz.org website. And again, so in other words, those are two possibilities. If you want to hear the show, freakradio.org. If you want to hear past shows, huffsantacruz.org is where you go. Linda, I'm going
to
roll
I'll
on
have
you.
To
I'm going
to
give you a couple. Sorry?
Some more. The problem that we have is that the well-to-do people throughout this country are largely, many of them are ignoring this problem, and
right.
we're not getting an input of the brains and money that we need
right.
to deal with this
For
severe
sure.
problem.
For sure. Look, why don't you I'm interested in specifics about Redwood City and Menlo Park and what's happening with homeless people there and what the actual legal particulars are that you're fighting with, people you're organizing. Your broad arguments, though inspirational, and I'm with you all the way, frankly, are arguments that, we all agree with. And they don't really tell us anything new. And I don't want to, I guess I'm trying to kind of, I've got other stuff I'm going to be covering on the show shortly. So let me give you a minute to sum up and give me any new news that is happening and we'll take it from there.
Well, I found out what they're doing, what the authorities are doing with homeless people in Redwood City and in San Francisco, okay?
Okay.
In San Francisco, they put them on a bus and sent them to Redwood City. In Redwood City, they put them on a bus and sent them to San Francisco, okay? That tells you just about how brilliant our government is.
Now, where did you get this information from, and how often has it happened, as far as you know?
Well, it's partly hearsay, and I've partly seen it happen. And it, in addition, I personally know a 67-year-old woman who has been riding the buses all night, every night, for more than a year, because there is no place else for her to go.
Well, is that her choice, or are they putting her on the bus?
It's a combination of things, because she's just a teensy bit cracked. A lot of homeless people have minor mental problems, as you know, and she cannot. It's hard for her to bring her to accept the kind of help that's offered. Like, for instance, she doesn't want to go into a shelter where she might be physically assaulted, and I don't blame her. So it's hard. I offered to expose her case to the public, but she backed off from the publicity. So it's hard for her to. She needs somebody to lead her into a nice room and say, "This is yours." That's how we need to treat our, especially when they're losing their minds. But instead, she's riding the buses.
I got you. Okay, Linda. Well, that's an interesting point. And again, I'd love to get some information that there's a regular procedure where they're dumping people on buses and sending them down. But I'd like to hear some documentation on that. I appreciate your calling in. I invite you to call in again. We're having another show on Sunday from 9:30 in the morning to 1 in the afternoon. Take about half a minute and sum up, and then I'll leave you.
Well, I think the best step toward a solution would be for all the constituents to try to meet each other on the Internet, pass information back and forth all across the country, encourage other people to join, sort of one big online conversation about what the heck is going on, exchange information. So that's why I've given out my email address and my phone number to encourage people to get into this, because it's going to cause more disaster, more crime, more horrible things of all kinds if we don't fix it.
Okay, that's all we got time for. Linda, you know, call me on the Huff line later. We'll talk some more. I have some ideas for you, and we'll discuss them there. Thanks a lot. I've been talking with Linda Jolly. That's Linda, Jolley, 9 at yahoo.com, 650-630-3021. Won a case in the Redwood City courts when she was ticketed for inhabiting a vehicle. Thanks for calling, Linda, and give us an update again as soon as you can.
Wonderful, Robert. Thank you so much.
All right.
See you soon. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And now back to Sergeant Harms on the sidewalk of New Leaf Market about a week ago. But no, wait, we have our callers first. Hi there, caller. You're on the air.
Yes, let me turn my radio off.
Please, do so.
Hang on.
So, again, the call-in number is 427-3772, and off-air number is 423-4833.
Hello?
Hi there. We're talking with who?
I would prefer to remain anonymous.
All
right
there, anonymous woman. I think I know who you are. And
it's a concerned citizen.
Okay. So what you doing, CC, concerned citizen?
Okay. I just wanted to have a few minutes to talk about battered women, and I'm talking about battered women in the U.S., it's often swept under the rug, and focusing on women in domestic violence and women in institutional battery against women. And these survivors of a very degrading epidemic deserve the ultimate empathy and respect. And as for those who didn't survive, they say victims go straight to heaven. That's all I got to say.
Hey, well, thank you for calling in.
Well, I'd never heard it brought up on your show. Maybe it has been, but I just had to say my little blurb.
Yeah, I don't bring up the issue unless somebody talks about a particular battered woman that happens here, or that's happened with respect to a homeless person or a police officer. And, you know, if anybody out there has any specific information on rapes, batteries, we have talked a lot about rape and how the police department is in the eyes of really experts, not doing what it needs to do. It's got a third the closure record of every other of other cities its size in California. But thank you for calling in.
Sure.
All right.
Have a great evening.
You too. Bye-bye. And again, perhaps we're going back to Sergeant Harms at the New Leaf Planter.
So, you know, and unless there's something else that comes along until that happens.
No public hearings were held on this issue as far as I know. So as far as I can see, there, you know, the fact of the matter is businesses decide they want to move along a particular group of people. They chain off these areas. They remove benches that were previously there that impact disabled and poor people who live downtown. And then you, not and personally, but your officers go and give tickets to people who then sit next to a building, even though they have no other places to sit. That's outrageous, man.
Well, it's outrageous to say they have no other places to sit. There are hundreds of
when the benches have been removed from that area, they have no places nearby to sit. It's obviously an attempt to socially engineer and manipulate masses of people in the circumstances where they are simply trying to exercise their rights to be in public, you know?
Well, you know, unfortunately, the people who frequented the benches put them in such a state of disrepair that the benches need to be removed. You and I know that. I mean, look at those things. Look at underneath every one of the benches down here. It's absolutely disgusting. So the benches were all removed, or some of the benches were removed to deal with those issues.
You know of your own personal knowledge that any of the benches by the Metro were actually in a condition that needed repair?
I would say yes, because I wouldn't sit on any of them. They were disgusting.
I have found no particular problem with any of the benches. Maybe you're much more fastidious than I could be.
I don't know. I can't answer that either. I'm not you.
The benches at Borders were removed for repair and haven't returned in the last 2 or 3 years. Isn't that interesting?
Got somebody driving the wrong way.
Uh-oh.
Hey, you got a car, buddy? Talking with Steve Lyle.
And Steve, go ahead.
Well, I was sitting in front of the sitar in Inn Cuisine. It was about 13 feet from the door, and obviously the law is 14 feet, which I had no clue to, and it should be posted, and I certainly wouldn't have been sitting there. But I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to fight the ticket and do the best I can and make them post the law.
When did you get this ticket?
I got it about a week ago.
And day or night?
It was daytime.
And what was the nature of the communication you had with the police officer who gave you the ticket?
He just gave me a ticket, didn't tell me that, you know, it's 14 feet away. We're going to let you have one shot because you don't know, because I'm new in town. I think it should be posted. If it was posted, I would follow the law.
And the name of the officer?
His name is... I have it here on my ticket. You probably know the name very well, I'm sure.
Let's take a look here. It's 14 feet from the window. Daniel, badge 199.
Yeah,
could be Forbus.
Unless she's got the grease back hair and we always wear shorts.
Possibly Forbus.
Parks his car and walks, you know.
Forbus is downtown and he does wear shorts and walks around.
That's him.
It could be, although I can't quite read the signature.
I can't either.
You're from Santa Monica.
Yes, I am.
So did he say to you anything at all before he gave you the ticket?
Absolutely nothing. He just asked me for ID, ran me, and started systematically writing me a ticket without even... You know, as much as telling me, well, I'll let you go this time since it's not posted, which I thought he should do, you know.
You know, you have no responsibility to giving him any ID, you know that.
Well, you know, I try to, you know, to keep things in on, you know, on the level. I try and produce my ID when they ask me. And in the past, when I have refused to show ID, I've been thrown in jail all over the country for that, so.
It's not legal to be thrown in jail for now. You don't have to have ID. Now, it's true that... Your rights may be violated. I'm saying this more for people on the radio than for you.
That is correct. Yeah.
And therefore, you know, I mean, it's the first thing they ask the officer, is there a problem?
Mm-hmm.
And if the officer says, you know, he's going to arrest you, it may be wiser to give your name and address. You don't have to provide ID. If you have ID, you can provide it. But there's a lot of fishing expeditions go on Pacific Avenue where they run up and down, you know, making stops of people, doing warrant checks.
He didn't know me, you know. He would like to know if I'm running from the law or who I am. And
there's no right to know anything of the kind unless he has some evidence that you're running
from
the law.
Three days, I've been stopped 8 times when I first got in town. Systematically run 8 times my ID. And, you know, I have nothing to hide, so I produced my ID, but...
This was about a week ago?
A week ago. For 3 days, I was stopped every block, it seemed like, and asked for ID.
Yeah, see, that's why it's time to say, you know, officer, why are you stopping me? or can I help you? What's the problem? And, you know, if there's no problem, then the next key words are, am I free to go? Mm-hmm. So, and it says, well, I'd like to see some ID. You say, am I free to go? Mm-hmm. If you repeat the question, am I free to go?
Right.
And if he says no, then you can say, you can either show him ID or you can say, you know, I'm not aware that I'm doing anything wrong. If I'm doing something that you think is a criminal violation, let me know what it is.
Exactly.
We can talk about it, or, you know, I can, you know, actually, you don't want to talk about it. You want to just say, I have nothing to say. I want to speak to a lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't consent to any searches. And that really puts them in a position where they can't do anything unless they have evidence against you then and
there.
Well,
they have searched me twice as well.
With or without your consent?
Well, with my consent.
Don't give your consent.
You know,
I do not, unless you have a probation condition or parole condition.
I don't. I try and obey the law, but I'm tired of, you know, people going through my belongings.
It's not healthy in a society for police to be given that kind of power.
No,
you know, unless there's some reasonable suspicion or probable cause that you've committed a crime, you know?
Absolutely none. There's absolutely no reason. I wasn't drinking. I don't do drugs. So there was absolutely no provocation of any kind.
Well, you're obviously a scurrilous type of person, and I can't talk to you because your eyes look very suspicious.
Well, thank you very much.
And blue, I might add, yes. And this guy with the guitar has to be stopped.
Yes,
we don't want your kind around here.
Anyway, I thank you for talking to me, and I'm going to go fight this in court, and I'm going to plead not guilty and demand a jury trial, which you're not going to want to
get a jury trial on an infraction. But what you can do is that card also has the time and the meetings of HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, the group I work with.
Mm-hmm.
Every Wednesday morning at 9:30 in the morning, we meet in the basement of the county building.
Oh, really?
And so come there, we can talk about how you can defend yourself in court if you want.
Well, I do want to bring it to court, and I do want to, you know.
You can also bring it to city council tomorrow. The last meeting of the summer is tomorrow.
Oh, really?
Of the Santa Cruz City Council. They are.
Are you going to be there?
I'll be there.
I do that because I think it should be posted, all these silly infractions, you know, because down there, there's only 6 feet of boardwalk. So if you sat 14 feet from the door, you'd be in the middle of the road. Does that make sense?
Well, that shows you what they want to have done with you, doesn't it?
It shows me exactly what they're doing. Systematic search.
Tomorrow by the time this is played on the radio, the last session will have happened, but it is tomorrow at 3 o'clock and at 7 o'clock. You can speak at city council for 2 minutes. You can say, this is my concern, council members. They don't give a shit.
Yeah.
It goes out over the radio and the television, or it goes out over the television. And
well, maybe I'll
so it goes out
3 and 7 tomorrow?
3 and 7, right across from a library.
Right across the city hall building?
Yeah, bring some people with you who've also suffered similar experiences.
I will do that. Absolutely, I will do that, because a bunch of us are a little bit upset, so I think it'd be a good way to vent.
Thank you. We've been talking with
Steve Lyle. Thank you.
Thanks,
Steve.
And unfortunately, Steve Lyle did not show up for either of those sessions, as far as I know. And if he had, he would have found it hard to get much done, because Mayor Coonerty cut back the first oral communications time to 1 minute each. And the second one was also filled up with people. But it's very difficult for people to speak about these issues, particularly if they confront people with badges and guns and they're in a vulnerable position. I am concerned about fighting back against the police attempt to put everybody in a file and get everybody used to saying, this is my name, yes sir, no sir, 3 bags full, to the police department, even if the police have no reasonable suspicion or probable cause for doing what they're doing. The basic rule is, really, in spite of any crime dramas you may have seen on TV, in spite of your fear that the police are going to treat you worse if you assert your rights, and even in a polite manner, it is your constitutional right, and frankly, it needs to become practice of the community to say to police officers, look, am I free to go? Okay, and if I'm not free to go, and you want to know, I want to see some ID, you say, why? And they say, well, I don't need to, just show me some ID. Well, am I free to go? We prefer you cooperate. No, am I free to go? And then you just leave. You gradually don't run away, you kind of walk away. If they say, no, you're not free to go, you say, I have nothing to say, I don't consent to a search, I want to speak to a lawyer. And you keep saying that. The real point is that the police get a lot of information out of people that they shouldn't be getting. It's not healthy for our community for them to get. And it also is narrowly focused and hostily focused on street people and poor people and often people of color. Whom the police regard for one reason or another as suspicious. And not necessarily suspicious in the sense that they've committed any major crimes, but they just you know, they may find them undesirable to be downtown. They may be told by merchants that they're undesirable. They may be violating minor ordinances that actually simply involve being in a public space, laws that criminalize being in a public space that are really unconstitutional, but that no one has had the ovaries or the balls to challenge or the resources to challenge. And again, there are many things you can do when a police officer demands ID or wants to stop you. Say, officer, I'd like to talk to your sergeant before I want to go any further. I got nothing more to say to you, but I'll be happy to wait here for your sergeant. We can talk to him. That's fine. Or you can say, what do you want to do? You want to arrest me for what? If it's during the daytime on a weekday, and that's important because it has to be actually during court hours, take me to a magistrate. Take me right away to a magistrate to show probable cause that you're actually, there's a basis for your stopping me at all. Or you can simply say, I'm not going to resist any arrest. I'm happy to be arrested. I have nothing more to say to you. Let's go. Because what the police are doing is they're engaging in systematic intimidation tactics of people downtown. Now, I know that one easy way to proceed, and perhaps even a better way than the way I suggest, is simply to say, yes, sir, three bags full, and disperse, and then come back when the cop isn't around. But the problem with that is, first of all, I suppose it's good strategy. I regard it as a little humiliating, but maybe not. I mean, you're dealing with some characters with a whole set of irrational special interest rules, guns and badges, which, are nothing to sneeze at. They are serious lethal weaponry. They got tasers. They got clubs. They have, more important, they have the delusion that they're engaging in socially beneficial work in many cases when just the opposite is happening. Not always true. Police officers can do good things. And when they investigate major crimes, hopefully they do good things. But I'm talking about their behavior on Pacific Avenue, generally. And that's what I was talking to Officer or Sergeant Harms about in terms of this new no trespassing on half the public sidewalk, because the redevelopment agency has got this stupid new scheme to remove people by actually congesting the area further and crowding the sidewalk further. It's really ridiculous. And it's really kind of laughable. Unfortunately, when people get harassed, it's not really a laughing matter. Few more interviews from the street now. Assuming I can get this tape recorder to work, that is. Having a little technical problem here. Let me give it another try.
Let me just ask you about this. And you can say, I won't push it if you don't want to, but you were talking with
Robert Tillman.
And Robert, we just had a long conversation with Sergeant Harms about an incident that happened with Officer Wilson, is that his name? Last night, involving dropping your phone on the sidewalk and searching you without probable cause or even reasonable suspicion in your view. But you said that you've had problems with the police before, and you got some help from your family. Did you say you actually got a restraining order against Officer Hoppe?
Yes, I did. And it's not like Hoppe just harassed me for a year straight. Every single day, searched me. Every single day, at least twice. Sometimes three times, sometimes four times. And it got old.
It's been a drug bust, what, 4 years ago, right?
Yeah.
A conviction.
Yes. No contest.
No contest.
Yeah, but they made us plead out to it, and it was a felony.
Do you have a parole or probation condition when Hoppe was stopping you?
Yes, I did.
So he was within his legal rights to stop you?
He was, but not as much as he was. Not at the extent that he was
what
doing.
What judge gave the restraining order?
I believe it was Addict.
And what did you? Were you in court when the restraining order was given?
No, my mother was there. I wasn't there.
And what was the nature of the restraining order? What in fact did it say?
That he could not search me anymore, that he could not come within 20 feet of me, that he could not bother my mother or my sister or my mother's girlfriend.
And had he been bothering those three people in addition to you?
Just one time, but the one time that he did is what caused such a big problem.
And do you want to describe that incident?
He just came up to all of us and searched all of us at Taco Bell at the end of the street in 2004.
Was this in your mind racial profiling?
Yeah, pretty much.
He was just looking
to see if he can find some more marijuana on me or something of the type.
Are your mother and any of your other relatives who were searched on probation or parole?
No.
And so did they give their consent?
Yes, they did.
Big mistake.
Yeah, it's a big mistake. But, you know, you can search somebody if you're with people that are on probation. It is something that they can do, and I'm pretty sure about
that's
that.
That's new to me.
That's what I heard. So that's all that I know.
It may be true. As far as I know, it's not. I wouldn't allow it. I mean, I would object to it anyway.
When I lived at my mother's house, they could search the whole house just because I lived there.
Well, that's because you live there.
Yeah.
But they can't search your mother if you're walking down the street with her. They can't search me if I'm standing next to you. I mean, unless there's some suspicious activity between us.
Well, that's what they'll always say, is there's suspicious activity.
Well, if they want to make that allegation, then they have to present evidence in court or at some point, or at least in a police report, that that's what's going on. Were you exchanging drugs with your mother?
No.
Were you engaged in soliciting for your sister?
No.
Okay, I just want to make sure nothing suspicious was going on here. Anyway, so Officer Hoppy has been treating you better the last year?
Oh, Hoppy doesn't bother me. He totally knows that I'm not one of those punk kids down here, and he's actually mellowed out a lot.
We've been talking with?
Robert Tillman.
Thank you, Robert. Black
There's all the cops there. Tell everybody.
What's happening?
Cops. Cops. Like chasing everybody away.
Okay. I go take a look. I thought it was Suzanne and JR doing some music on the corner of Soquel and Pacific with some nice chalking around them. Save your trees. And other messages written in erasable chalk. Hi. On the sidewalk. And we have a squad car up here with flashing lights. What's happening, Sergeant? I can't keep up with you.
There's always something. I'll be back down here.
All right. Looks like a no information from the police, of course, but the squad car is double parked here in front of the Pacific Trading Company. Two squad cars, actually.
Hey, repel! I'll catch up with you guys in a second.
So what's happening, folks? Anything of note?
Officer 120 Michael?
Yeah.
Officer 120 Michael Harms came by to deal with the situation and is now very, very peaceful.
Okay. Somebody has complained about my drumming on every block from the clock tower down.
Are you a bad drummer,
15
sir?
Minutes within me sitting down. I try to drum quieter than the acoustic guitar so that we can hear the rest of the music.
And we're talking. And the name of the drummer here is
Miguel De Leon.
Thank you, Miguel. And
they got creative today. I got a ticket for I guess I didn't get enough sleeping tickets, but they gave me a ticket for obstructing the walkway at Monument for having my stuff next to the clock tower.
And when was this?
Earlier today.
The officers that gave you this ticket, or the officer?
Seeley, Officer Seeley.
Was he alone or in company?
No, he had a partner with him.
Time of day?
I'm not sure.
And what did he say to you as he gave you the ticket?
No, not much, just that he was giving it to me.
Did anybody else get tickets who was with you?
I think somebody else there had got a ticket or something, but I'm not sure for what.
Now, I see two squad cars parked here, actually, in illegal spots on the street.
Which is okay for them because they're cops, so they can do whatever illegal they want.
Right, but what prompted the two police cars to come here?
We were doing some music here. A couple different musicians had got together and were doing some music here, and, you know, it was really nice. It was actually really nice.
And so it looks like the music has ended.
And the cops had to come stop it.
The music has ended. Well, you know, at time it's about 7:20 in the evening. The standard for unreasonable noise at this hour is very high as far as...
Anybody with a telephone or a cell phone,
stopping music.
Anybody with a cell phone can call the police and have total control and all the rights of the world to stop anybody from doing anything which is their right.
Actually, they can't. They can make a complaint, you know, but they
can't. Anybody with a cell phone can call the police and say whatever the fuck they want to them, and the police are going to come over here and sweat us because some dude's walking by and he's pissed off that his girl's dancing to my music. I see it every day.
Right.
Dude walking by with his cell phone, his girl stops and is dancing, and she wants to give me a dollar, and he ain't getting that dollar. He's pissed off, so I see him over there and even hear him on the phone calling the cops, making this complaint. I'm on the block, I'm sleeping, and he's waking me up.
How many musicians were here today that were driven away? And this latest incident?
Five or six of us here this time, but you know, I've been here.
Were you here a part of the group?
I was around, but I wasn't playing drums.
So
What did the what officer stop to just tell you to stop playing or to warn you, and what exactly happened?
Yeah, it's a different one every time.
And this
they come up and say, oh, we got complaints. You gotta keep move along. And of course, you know, I'm gonna do what they want to do because I can't fight them. So you know, what can I do besides, you know?
Well, the answer of the, I mean, what you need to do, in my view, although of course it's always up to you, is look at the unreasonable noise code, which I've got. Unreasonable noise code is really got a very high standard. They can't, on the basis of the fact that somebody complains, drive you away. What they can do is,
they ticket me and arrest me, they say.
They can ticket you, but they have to, but if they ticket you falsely and they do so repeatedly, they come under some suspicion of,
if you want to go
selective enforcement.
You know, I've lost most of the tickets that I collect. I used to have a pocket where I collected all my tickets, but
yeah,
they got taken. But,
is this the officer? One of the officers told you to stop?
If you want to go check the records of Miguel de Leon and see all the tickets I've gotten, I'd like to know how many they've racked up, you know? I know that, me personally, I've held enough paper, enough yellow paper, that I feel that if each one of those is still growing,
I see Officer
Forbes, I'll never be able to pay that off, no matter what, anyway.
Well, the rule with, and I hear you. The rule with the so-called unreasonable noise ordinance, which I have a copy of.
I asked them how many decibels is that. They said they don't know.
Right. They're not required to do decibels, but they are required to have a standard of proof, which is this. They need to show that you are making noises or sounds which are unreasonably disturbing or physically annoying to people of ordinary sensitiveness, or which are so harsh, prolonged, unnatural, or unusual in their use, time, or place as to cause physical discomfort to any person. And they also have to prove that it is not necessary in connection with an activity which is otherwise lawfully conducted, which you are doing, an activity lawfully conducted. Therefore, it is essentially a bluff. They are telling you to stop playing music based upon a claim that actually is a false report.
Okay, but in my world, he's got a gun and a stick.
I know.
And I don't even have anybody I can call to let them know I'm in jail. They can disappear me anytime they like. I've made it to a courthouse by grace of God, and the judge is wondering how I got booked in with an unfilled out booking sheet.
In Santa Cruz?
No, this was in Sacramento.
Right. It's worse than Sacramento.
The judge was like, where's the charges? What did he get arrested for? But it didn't make the difference. I met a dude in L.A. County in the intake buildings that had been going around in circles for 6 years because they can't find his paperwork.
I understand.
Talking about, here's some numbers, call somebody for me.
Right. Well, I'm interested in seeing street performers get together to fight this shit. And I understand doing it alone is a really lonely and kind of daunting task. Right? It's intimidating. So all I can do is advise people as to what your rights are in theory. And that, of course, is theory is theory, and, you know, street is street. There's a difference. But it's also true that at some point, if these laws are widely enough known, and if people speak up loudly enough, then the police have to answer.
If you do a little study on World War II and the torture they were doing to some of the POWs there, some of the...
The U.S. is torturing people right now as we speak.
You know, mental torture, and they're doing that to us, to no sleep, making sure we don't get peaceful sleep, you know what I'm saying? Everywhere I go to work, I get charged more than I make in a week.
Well, that's because you're a terrorist. With a feather in your hair, it's quite clear you're a very serious criminal type.
It ain't funny, is it?
Hey, they're very much, very much hitting us all and got us scattered out, you know what I mean?
Come to a...
They got the guns and the sticks. I got nothing.
Yeah.
I think that they got the cages. They got the backup. They're
you want to come
good,
to a seminar on how to fight these tickets, let me know.
I feel that we definitely need a sanctuary out here.
I hear you.
You know, open door sanctuary. And that's the only place I can have a home.
I hear you, man. Okay, we've been talking with...
Yeah. Miguel de Leon.
Miguel, thank you for giving us this grim tale. And...
I'll try to take over the late night so we can drop beats and rap and all that shit off.
Here. We're talking with...
Yeah, I just want to say that...
talking with...
My name's Colin, and I just want to say, like, a lot of people have been hanging out around the area, around New Leaf, where there's the sidewalk cafe and everything. It's been a really good time at night. Just as far as, like, a really happy atmosphere with music and people having a good time. Well, those people happen to be predominantly impoverished, and so now there's this chain up with some kind of sign about how you can't do stuff. Like, that's one thing we need, is another sign telling us not to do things, right? So, anyway, I just want to say, I think that's really mean-spirited, a New Leaf, you know? And that, you know, I hope that the folks at New Leaf can, you know, learn to respect other people as human beings regardless of how much money they may or may not have in their pocket at any given time.
Thank you, Colin.
Excellent.
We're talking with
John Clower.
John, you're not the John Clower who got the shit beat out of in 1989.
Yeah, that's me.
Welcome back, John.
Yeah. Okay, well, listen. I found out from a girl that came over, and she goes, you know what? I was staying in this same very apartment, and there was three or four Mexicans living here, and it turned out that they were renting the apartment to these Mexicans and also collecting Section 8 HUD money.
What's the address of this?
350 Ocean.
And the name of the landlord?
Shadman. It's Michael Shadman.
And the name of the manager?
Manuel Marino. And he wouldn't tell me his real name. He kept trying to say his name was Frank, just like Prince, with no last name. He wouldn't let me put the address on the money order.
You say that, and as I recall from what you just said, John, you were in jail for a period of time, but your rent had been paid. No three-day notice was given to you.
And the woman was on the rental contract, and they were trying to force her out of there.
They came in the middle without giving 24-hour notice of coming in, taking your property, and so forth.
Came in there and removed property, took all the property that was out behind the place on the patio, and kept harassing this woman, right?
So if anyone has had a similar experience, again, at the complex, either with your landlord or with someone in this area, give a call to 423-HUFF-423-4833, or you can call into the show at 427-3772.
What is all these phone numbers?
It's a radio show.
No.
Phone number.
Anyways, what's going on is this guy, I told him I'm taking him to small claims court and suing him for $7,500 for the Corvette he towed away, because you can't tow the car away when I'm a tenant. You have to evict me before you can tow it away. It's registered to me. You can't just come.
You weren't violating any rules in terms of parking or anything.
No, it was parked in my space, right in front of my apartment. And he goes, well, I thought it belonged to the guy in number 6. I said, well, it did at one time, but at the time you towed it, it was registered to me. I paid $260 at the DMV to register it. And go, the tow bill came to my address, so you know damn well it shows on the computer my car.
So naturally he agreed to pay for all the expenses and have the car returned.
He agreed to anything. And I told him your manager, not only is the manager like dumb, but he's homosexual, and he lures young guys over there, like they look like high school guys, and he smokes angel dust, KJ. So he's moonwalking around the complex, right?
Well, his sexual habits and his drug habits are really,
yeah,
as far as I'm concerned, his own affair.
Like,
but if he's a corrupt landlord, or he's seducing young
and
people,
I can't understand why the landlord hired this guy. The guy didn't even know how to write a rent receipt. He wouldn't put his full last name. He wouldn't show me his ID. I showed him my ID, and he wouldn't let me put the address, and he wouldn't let me put on the money order from, you know, like April 4th to May 4th and like that. And I felt like he wanted me to leave the tattoo blank on the money order. Like, I felt like the guy was just going to take my money order and split for Mexico or something, right?
You would be supporting a vacation. Now, what's wrong with that, John?
No. So, I want a good, hardcore attorney. I think legal aid's a little bit whooshy. I want a shark. Because I want to sue them, because what I found out is they're tearing that whole section down, and in conjunction with the city, they're putting up some kind of elderly apartments.
Who's on the corner of Broadway and Ocean?
Well, the NCAL called Motel Santa Cruz now is on the corner, and then there's a beat-up house, and then three rows of apartments, and I'm the center row that was remodeled. But they've had trouble with those apartments all for years and years, drugs and gangs.
John, let me jump back, though, because, I mean, if anybody has a lawyer for you, John, or if a lawyer is interested, give a call to 423-HUFF,
423-483. Well, I got a phone.
You can leave your number if you want on there.
332-5690.
332-5690. Okay.
And I know that was illegal, to keep a key, go in there and hassle. She's essentially my wife. She lived with me for a year and a half, right?
Well, let me
and
jump.
Nowadays, he comes over, the manager guy comes over and tells, which is essentially my wife, although we're not, I don't have a license, we're not legally married. He comes over and tells her she can't be over at the neighbor's apartment in the backyard. Tells her you can't be here, right?
Well, it sounds like it sounds like a lot of restrictions, John, but this is stuff you're going to have to work out. Hopefully you'll get a lawyer to help you. Let me jump back, because when I last talked to you 19 years ago, actually I talked to you a couple years after that, you had been I dragged you in front of me.
I saved that woman's life, and the DA admitted it.
Now, you actually were in a situation where you some woman was being what?
She got beat up, raped, and they were trying to slit her throat and kill her. She broke loose from them, broke a window in an abandoned house, and screamed, "I don't want to die," and I got off my bicycle, took my headlight, which was a flashlight, came around to the side of the building, and she's standing there with blood pouring out of her neck. And the two guys ran out of the building, jumped the fence, and I told the neighbor to call the police. And when the police came, they ran up, cuffed me, and he pulled a blackjack out of his hip pocket and started beating me. That's what these scars are on my face.
You're beating about the head, shoulders, knees.
Broke my knee and a couple ribs. And
then dragged you in front of Mayor Wormhout to have some action. What action did the city take?
Actually, what happened was they conspired.
And again, this is an interesting case to me because I actually wrote about it 20 years ago. I ran into Clower, who was beaten up. I'd just been released from jail. And at that time, Marty Wormhout was mayor. This was, I think it was right before the earthquake happened in the fall of 1989. And I kind of took him into the mayor's office. He was bleeding. I led him into the mayor's office, interrupting what she was doing, because I was so shocked by his story of his being beaten by police while in handcuffs. That's what he described there very briefly, and now he's describing what happened afterward. This is written about in the Street Shit Sheet, the newsletter I used to write very regularly back then, almost often twice a week. And it's available in the public library, the Santa Cruz Public Library Central Branch, if you ever want to look it up. The guy's name is John Clower, Clauer, and again, it happened in the fall of 1989, if you want to read my account of what went down there. This stuff hopefully will sometime be chronicled on HuffSantaCruz.org, the Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom website. Here again is a little more of Clauer's story. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, FreakRadio.org. My name is Robert Norse. This is Bathrop Spears Broadsides. And anyone's invited to call in, supporters, critics, neutral parties, whatever. There's often people who are on the Internet and the Sentinel forums demanding that I respond to their latest arguments. And I said to them, come on the air. Ask your questions there. We'll talk about it there. And they don't want to do that. They just want to take pot shots. But I invite anybody who's a critic to come on and talk about the New Leaf Market, I should say, the redevelopment agency's closure of the sidewalk in front of the New Leaf Market. I've just been informed that the Public Records Act request that I made has been granted somewhat, and there are papers down at the city clerk's office. Lori has the papers available, although she wouldn't give me a description of what they were, so I can't really tell you what they were, but I can go in. I'll probably be examining them tomorrow and on my Sunday show coming back with some of the details of what prompted this closure of the sidewalk, though I think that we're going to get a lot of nothing, pretty much, a lot of stonewalling. That's been my experience with the redevelopment agency in the past, although there was a time when there were more emails available, and I think I'm afraid that time may be past because I'm afraid the redevelopment agency is covering its tracks better these days and using front businesses to take the heat. There's a lot of hostility toward New Leaf Market and, to some extent, some of the other businesses downtown that are adjacent to this whole public sidewalk being closed area, although at least two of those businesses, Alfresco's and Cafe Campesino, have been quite sympathetic to homeless people and people hanging out in the street in the past. And there have been some problems. You know, people have been gathering more at night. There have been greater numbers of people gathering. and there have been, you know, music and loud colloquy at night. But if there's criminal behavior, then there's criminal behavior, and there's criminal law to cover criminal behavior. You don't need to treat everyone who's innocent or gathering as a potential or an actual criminal by closing off the public space. And I think that unless the businesses there support the right of the public to have public space, by, I'm going to suggest they post a statement that we are required by the redevelopment agency to do this, and it's their doing, not ours. We'd like to see the space opened up, but we can't do it. But I think, you know, that a lot of the animus would be, a lot of the hostility some people feel toward these businesses would be, you know, mellowed out. Certainly the hostility I feel toward this event happening, and it really pisses me off when they start removing benches, putting in change-making machines, sending out extra squads of cops to harass people. John Clower is going to talk about now what happened to him after I brought him in to then-Mayor Marty Wormhout, bloody, and I said, do something about this case. And she said she would, but of course what she did was nothing particularly remarkable, and here is his description of what happened to him subsequently. Of course, I've got to get the tape recorder to work, which is always can be a trial. I think I will try another machine, and maybe I'll get a better outcome. It would be nice. Some people suggest I should change from tape recording and come into the 21st century, but I'm an old timer, by cracky. Alrighty, here we go. Let's see where we're at.
Sure that I couldn't sue them, and they hid from me the fact you have to go down to City Hall within 6 months and do a dollar damage claim. And once the 6 months was up, what they did was they came at me with a bogus burglary charge, and they said, we need to test your blood, and then they kept saying that the test, well, I had to test again because the blood dried up, and I told the judge, I go, well, you know, test my blood the same way you tested it, dried up blood at the scene of this supposed burglary, and what it was all cooked up.
Were you held in jail at the time?
No, what they did was they charged me with resisting arrest, and they didn't want to say what, you know, you can't be resisting arrest if there was no charge to arrest me on, right? But they took the victim and sent her to an alcohol program in San Francisco.
What was the name of the victim, remember?
Oh, boy. I'd have to research that.
And again, he's talking about the woman whose life he saved, whose throat was being slashed, and who was being threatened with rape and beaten, and who broke the window to get his attention as he was biking by. And that was on Ocean Avenue, as I remember, or Ocean Street.
But anyway, they got her out of town because she was going to testify. She told the mayor that I ran the guys off. And they told the homeowner that I told the call of police. They tried to pressure her not to testify in a trial because I told them I was going to sue them. And I didn't know you had to file a dollar damage claim. So then after 6 months was up, they violated a felony probation that was 4.5 years old on the basis that I had two of those things where they pull you in for 5 hours and hold you on the basis that you're drunk in public, and an open container ticket, or an open container ticket that was dismissed. In a 4.5 year period, that was my only contact with the police. So they violated my felony probation and sent me to prison for 2 years because it was a case of a friend of mine had a paint sprayer.
What are you doing back in Santa Cruz? Are you crazy?
I'm going to be here till I'm dead. You know what I mean? And
you like it.
Kill me, you should be quiet about it. So, you know what I mean? I'm not going to be run out of town.
And John actually went on at greater length about his experiences in prison and his current adventures in Santa Cruz. I may play some of that on Sunday, but I'm going to give us another brief musical break. And then we're going to, I think, I'm going to make a few announcements. May have time to begin at least part of the Downtown Commission hearing from a week ago on the parking lot panic law, as I call it. Actually, they didn't really talk about it much at all. They let the police, they kind of softballed the police department that came over, which none of the stats that were requested by Sheila Coonerty. And, well, we'll be hearing about that in a moment. I passed through Portsmouth, I heard a young woman lamenting her husband one morning in May. For his body lies cold in the far South Atlantic, down at the bottom of San Carlos Bay. Like thousands of kids out of Belfast and Brixton, the dole or the army, the choices were few. No money for hospitals, schools, or a factory, but millions to spend on the red, white, and blue. Why was he sent to that cold, barren island to lay down his life halfway round the world? There's nothing but sheep and a few hundred people. Were we really that bothered whose flag was unfurled? Down in the seas of the far South Atlantic, black oil in plenty lies close to the shore. Did he know that he died for the city of London? Like vultures they wait for the spoils of war. Once more the old cry is for Queen and for country. Like Suez and Cyprus, we've heard it before. How long will they cling to that damn scrap of empire? How many more lives will be wasted in war? As I passed through Portsmouth, I heard a young woman lamenting her husband one morning in May. For his body lies cold in the far South Atlantic, down at the bottom of San Carlos Bay. And that was a Roy Bailey song called Malvinas, about the British invasion of the Falklands back in the early 80s under the generalship of Margaret Thatcher, for all you history buffs who look back 26 years. I'm going to play now, I guess, a little of the Downtown Commission and its most recent hearing. And this actually is a bit of the meeting prior to their discussion of the parking lot panic law. The Downtown Commission is a group of folks appointed by the city council. Each council member, I think, appoints a member of the commission, or at least anyway, they all vote on it, I think. And this is a group that's supposed to deal with downtown problems. And they gave us the nasty downtown ordinances, the move along every hour law, the forbidden zones don't sit near a building law. They okayed the hosts. They okayed the I believe they are consulted on the rules on tight cracking down on street performers. They're a group of people with, I think, very narrow merchant interests. And they have taken some time before Coonerty's latest brainchild, the parking lot panic law, which I'm not going to talk about now because I don't know that we have time in the next 25 minutes to go into it, though I will be playing the whole Downtown Commission hearing. I think it lasted maybe half an hour. On this, it wasn't really even a hearing. It was an informational item at the request of a Downtown Commission member. The chair, who is really a horrible chair in my view, Jerry Mandel, significantly worse than the prior chairs of the Downtown Commission, Julie Shattuck, and I think Sheila Coonerty may have been chair at one time. Sheila Coonerty, as I mentioned before, though, the aunt of Ryan Coonerty and the sister of Neil Coonerty, the supervisor. Both Neil and Ryan are anti-homeless in their legislative outlook and, in my mind, part of the phony gentrification merchant mentality that's taken over Santa Cruz, at least the Santa Cruz City Council, though that's nothing new. Coonerty, Sheila Coonerty, is a member of the ACLU, and she has expressed some reservations about the sweeping parking lot panic law, and I've talked about that in the past, and I'll talk about it more. So she asked for stats from the police department, and I played a prior downtown commission meeting where she requested those stats, and the police department had blown her off, in essence, and they blew her off again at this meeting, and it's interesting, she may be becoming more militant. I kind of doubt it's going to go very far, but I'd like to see it. I'd like to see some demands for real stats from the police department. Namely, where's the crime wave that requires making everybody who sits down under a tree in a parking lot a criminal for being there? Or a mother who sits for 16 minutes in a vehicle with her child is a criminal. That's a crime under the Coonerty parking lot panic law. And it has to be selectively enforced, and it is. Every Wednesday, yesterday, there was a whole group of people playing music who didn't have cars, didn't have vehicles. They were occupying the public space. They weren't blocking cars, but they were there illegally. And because they had asserted with the community support, fuck your laws, Coonerty. Fuck your laws, City Council, on this issue. Frankly, there are basic rights that human beings have that you have to respect. You know, when unjust law is a law to be ignored. It's really as simple as that. And the police, you know, decided they didn't want to risk mass confrontation, so they selectively enforce. They'll go there when there are only a few people there and harass them. They'll go to the parking lot number 9 across from Elm Street, which used to serve food more frequently than it does now, and they'll harass the homeless people there or in the parking lot. They'll harass Nicholas Andreas, the guy who did a video show in the parking lot at Laurel and Front Street. A show harming no one, a show that was like the Guerrilla Theater will be happening tomorrow night on Pacific Avenue, was shown on the side of a building, creating no problems. But the police used 4 squad cars, came down, ticketed, harassed on 2 separate occasions, and then didn't show up in court when the ticket came up. Anyway, this is the downtown commission, and this is a meeting that happened a week ago, literally, on the 24th of July at 8:30 in the morning for all you early birds. I was unfortunately in that position. Boy, this mic is way down. I don't know why. There we go. Anyway, they have an oral communications period at the beginning, and that's what I spoke at. Or that's where I made an initial presentation. I was the only member of the public there that I recall. There were a couple of cops there, Sergeant Harms and Lieutenant Hernandez. Zach Friend, the police propagandist, was there on the podium. And I think there was some public works woman who was going to talk about how wonderful the parking lot panic law was operating. But there were very, very few people there.
Also, you know, do 50 cents an hour for the ones that
are... Sounds like I may have the wrong tape on, and I think I do. Let me go to the right tape here. Sorry about that, folks. Yeah, I have tape number 2 on. I need tape number 1. We have these little setbacks, but I'll tell you, we're going to proceed anyway.
Jerry Mendel.
Here.
Julie Shattuck.
Here.
Ron Flack.
Here.
Sheila Coonerty has called and said she'll be 15 minutes late. I haven't heard from Joe Pierre.
I think staff heard that he would be absent today, so it's a notified absence.
Okay.
We're calling the roll here.
Okay. We're going to start with next with oral communications. If there's anyone here from the public who wants to speak about an issue that is not on our agenda today, please step forward and tell us your name and make your comments as brief as possible. Thank you.
Hey there.
Even city council mayor and the master of the gentrification and limiting public access rules, Ryan Coonerty, does not say make your comments as brief as possible during oral communications, because oral communications is supposed to be time when the community, the public, is allowed to have its piece. And he limits people to 2 minutes or 3 minutes. Actually, he limits them to 2 minutes. It used to be we had 3 minutes under other mayors. Under Mayor Coonerty, we only have 2 minutes. But he doesn't say make your comments as brief as possible. I suppose a generous interpretation would be that she's not giving a time limit. But let's see how much time she allows.
Commission members, though names are not required at these bodies, I'd be happy to tell you my name is Robert Norris, and I want to make a couple of commendations. I want to thank the Public Works Department for correcting the audio tape cost down from $6 to $1, which is the standard price at the city. And my thanks to Laura for getting the tapes available from the last meeting. The proposed minutes of the last meeting are not online, nor are any information items from the last meeting online. So it's kind of hard for the public, without doing extensive research, to know what's going on. So I encourage you to look into this. I think it's important to keep us active. As you can see, there are very few members of the public present. Admittedly, it's 8:30 in the morning. I'm concerned about the process being used to remove public spaces, public benches, and other architectural, what I call anti-homeless activity downtown. I mean, you may have noticed this in front of New Leaf Market, and I don't deny that some merchants and some members of the public and even I have had some concerns about some behaviors downtown. But the idea of a closed-door process where none of the community is involved other than merchants and police and possibly some city council members, to me, is really the wrong way to go about this. What's happening is people are being driven from the Poganip, from the beaches, from under the bridges, in increasing police sweeps, and they show up downtown. And then merchants blame people downtown for clustering and try to eliminate that public space. That's not a good way to go, and I think you need to develop some more creative solutions with all the people involved, or the stakeholders, as the rhetoric has it. Police online statistics, if you go to the police website, do not include citations for sitting near a building, for sitting on the edge of a planter, for all the tickets musicians and old-time musicians have been getting, for simply engaging in behavior they've always engaged in. Cosmic Chris, CJ Stock, Tamarack, Bam Bam, traditional musicians and drummers downtown who you may or may not know the names of, maybe you probably passed them many times, have all gotten citations for different things. They aren't behaving any differently than they ever did. So there is an emboldenment, or possibly the rookies are just trying out their ticket books. But I'm concerned because what we have is police being given license to selectively harass people. And sometimes, you know, it's appropriate when police do this, and other times it's not. But to give them this power generally, without any kind of check, and you are one of the checks, because there's no police review board anymore. City Council isn't a check. City Council gives the police pretty much what it wants. You spent some time analyzing the statistics before voting forward the parking lot. I call it the parking lot panic law. You call it the trespass and parking lots law. You at least did some research into it more than they did, and therefore you really are the citizens involved. You're not the politicians. You are individuals from the community who are, in fact, empowered and really concerned with this issue. Probably not in the same way I am. You have different priorities. But still, you are the community's link with these issues, the place where we can come publicly to talk about these issues. Now, we're in a time of economic turmoil and depression. People turn to established authority for security, sometimes false security in these times. Those who are cut off from social services, and I'm sure you're aware there are massive cuts in social services happening statewide, and basic human needs are now locked out of public spaces and driven along, and they grow more hopeless or they grow angrier. So we need to find reasonable compromises, not selective enforcement decisions, even from well-intentioned police officers. When the police are emboldened to believe that any powers they seek they can have, as I said, there's no check. When they need not present credible evidence to expand those powers, as you saw over the last 2 years and at the last meeting, they don't bother to muster the evidence. And when they realize they have a lock on the city council, they must be reminded that the people, not the politicians, are the ultimate authority. Now, this is rhetoric, but it's also true. So I encourage you to think about
agendizing a reexamination of the downtown ordinances and their enforcement and how effective they've been over the last few years in light of shrinking public space, make a requirement that when public space is closed permanently and benches are removed, that there be public hearings around these issues, and that alternate space be made available for space that is removed. Thanks.
And it looks like I did take, could be 4.5 minutes is what I got on my watch for that amount of speech time. And that may be why she immediately whipped out the clock the next time I spoke. Although she didn't interrupt me, I think she may have been making signals to me to cut it short. But I was, other than a brief statement from Keith Holtaway, the retiring executive director of the Downtown Association, formerly the owner of Pizza My Heart, there was, I don't think there was any other public commentary. There was no other oral communication. So these are bodies that are supposed to be the public's access. So I don't think I was out of line in what I said, and I think that, frankly, it needed to be said. And I think something actually more important, since I don't think the Downtown Commission is going to take any action, something needs to be done on this issue. There's going to be a lot more on the Downtown Commission on Sunday when I come back at 9:30, assuming the station is operating and I'm operating. And again, it's kind of talking about these issues. It's really more important to be organizing on the streets on these issues. For those of you who get passionate about it, we need to resist these bad laws. We need to reestablish and open public spaces that are closed. We need to defend the rights of people on the street, not just to talk to other people who are really uninterested in defending them or half-hearted about it. It lies in our own hands to defend our own rights. There's a very interesting Palo Alto tasering incident that happened. I was alerted to that by a Palo Alto correspondent. There are a couple of articles which I've sent around on the Huff email list. If you'd like to be on the Huff Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom email list, give me a call at 423-HUFF, 423-4833, and I will put you on, or email me at rnorse3@hotmail.com, rnorse3@hotmail.com. And I'll be talking about that one, too, on Sunday. A week from Sunday, on August 10th, I will have on the air for an hour and 15 minutes writer Bob Whitaker, whose book Mad in America is a truly classic refutation and of the pharmaceutical psychiatric complex, which has the billion-dollar, multi-billion-dollar industry, which is, I think, crippling Americans under the guise of curing or treating them and dealing with mental illness, as they describe it. He's been on the air before. You can Google for Mad in America or Bob Whitaker, W-H-I-T-A-K-K-E. Actually, I think it's 1K. Whitaker, Y-Taker, Whitaker, Y-W-H-I-T-A-K-E-R, and read some of what he has written in the past. I posted it online. I'll probably post it again. That's coming up. I'm also, before this is over, hopefully I'll be able to, I'm going to play an anti-war song or two recommended to me by Vision Song Valerie Christie, who plays on the streets frequently, actually regularly every week. She was feeding people for years as a part of SAFE, Society for Artistic Freedom and Expression, or Street Performers Against Foolish Enforcement, as I call it. But she's also works hard on Huff issues, and she came up with some interesting tunes, which she recommended to me, which I'm going to try to dredge up from my email and at least play one of them before this show ends, assuming that I can get the computer to behave as I hope it might. It's kind of slow. And again, I'm going to have a report. Hopefully, I'm going to be examining some of the documents around the New Leaf Market chain and give you some, hopefully, an update on what's going on with that. So that's going to happen on Sunday. And here it looks like a song, which I'm going to try to play now.
They know the reason why this administration went to war against the rich. want and a war. Stop the violence with peaceful torches. Bring home the troops to the mother's porches. One, two, three, four. The resolution is on the floor. This peace plan means no more bloodstains. No more killing for oil in vain. Yeah, join the conscious revolution. Let your voice be part of the solution. Strength through peace and harmony. One world based on integrity. Let's try peace and foreign policy. And revive our true democracy. Resolution 1234 is a plan to exit and close the door. To tanks on streets with worried faces. Sleepless nights and cold embraces. One, two, three, four. A revolution's about to soar. Peace must be the real intention. To channel the higher dimension. Yeah, join the conscious revolution. Let your voice be part of the solution. Strength through peace and harmony. Ensure domestic tranquility. Secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity.
Did not authorize the invasion of Iraq.
We did not authorize the invasion of Iraq.
We don't have to punish the people in Iraq because they have a leader who is unacceptable. We need to avoid war. War will damage our country's reputation.
Resolution 1234, of course, is Kucinich's resolution requiring that all U.S. armed forces be completely withdrawn from Iraq and return to the U.S. or redeployed outside of the Middle East within 3 months of the enactment, prohibiting all fund use under any provision of the law to deploy or continue to deploy members or units of the U.S. armed forces of Iraq as part of our Operation Iraqi Freedom. It exempts from such prohibition fund use to provide armed forces safe and orderly return, withdrawal, to ensure the security of Iraq by carrying out consultations with the government of Iraq, and to ensure the security of Iraq by funding the UN-led peacekeeping mission. I have a few doubts about that, but it certainly beats anything you hear coming from Obama, Wama, or the brain of McCain, not to mention Pelosi, and I can't think of an appropriate appellation for her. Anyway, you're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM. Thanks, tip of the hat to Valerie for the anti-war songs. She's come up with a bunch of them, and I invite people who've got songs who want to bring them up to bring them forward. I'm going to be, as I said, on Sunday talking more about a tasering incident in Palo Alto. That's a guy called Ciampi whose attorney is David Beauvais, an attorney who has taken cases in Santa Cruz successfully and sued the government. I'm also going to be looking at the upcoming Democratic convention and the counter-convention activities that are being planned, the protest activities. There's been some movement on downtown toilets and bathrooms, planned to set up, in today's Sentinel, and I will be talking about that, too, actually to have a open up bathrooms by businesses, which was tried in Santa Barbara. It wasn't too successful the first time. I think they actually had to put in a real bathroom independently of the, I mean, businesses have bathrooms, but they're not open 24 hours. And that's one of the problems with the downtown area. I had lots of stuff on Iraq prepared to go, but don't have any time for it. And I also had a very quick account from Tenderfoot Tim Rumford, who actually saw something outside his window that disturbed me. And I got his permission to read this with the understanding that he saw this whole incident from above the second floor. There were low lights, and he did not know what the person involved may or may not have done. What he writes is, we had an arrest here last night. It was too dark to tell, but the uniforms seemed brown. Could have been Capitola PD or sheriffs, the officers. One huge lady asked a younger black man to please stop. He was simply talking to someone and on foot right below our window. Then he did act slightly evasive when they said, stop right there, don't move. He asked why, and they did not answer except halt. He never ran. He never just acted like he had done anything and stupidly tried to walk away, although he changed directions and seemed panicky. This guy did not attend a Know Your Rights class, that's for sure. They both pounced on him. They did the arm twist, and he screamed. They were hurting him. She fell on him, all 300 pounds. They all got up, and he asked, why? What did I do? Why are you arresting me? One woman said, one more question, and the next thing I will do is break your fucking neck. Then they escorted him to the cars, parked far away, where I could not see them. No Miranda rights read up till then. I don't know what he may or may not have done, but records are not online here as they are in Santa Cruz. Would I still go to the county building, get a record of the arrest, and then to the cops to file a complaint? Possibly. So, we'll be talking more about this on Sunday, but it's time for me to be saying happy trails. And coming up next, from the cream to the dregs, with our very own Uncle Dennis. Welcome to the studio, Uncle Dennis.
Howdy, Bob.
And stay tuned. And come back again on Sunday. Also, check out the Human Rights Organization, 2 o'clock at the Taqueria Vallarta at Cathcart and Pacific on Saturday afternoon. We'll be talking more about what to do about the chained-off areas in front of New Leaf Market at night and other seizures of public space by our very own redevelopment agency and its clowns and clones. Thanks for being with me on this edition of Bathrop's Piers Broadsides.
My daddy made his living in the little southern town, and after school was over, I would help him with his rounds. He'd sit there in his pickup truck while I wore out my shoes, but he always walked beside me when I went up to old Joe's. Like all the other kids in town, I had never seen his face, though I used to leave his groceries at the back door of his place. And I knew somebody lived there, 'cause in the morning they'd be gone, but the curtains of old Joe's house were always tightly drawn. They say that in his younger days he'd loved another man. When that small town started talking, his friend died by his own hands. There was whispering amongst the women, hard talk amongst the men, but the curtains of old Joe's house were never pulled again. I could tell you where this happened, but I think you ought to know that right there where you're living, there are people like old Joe. For each of us has secrets that we keep on the backroom shelves, keep them hidden from our neighbours and often from ourselves. But everybody's got the right to be the way they are. If you're not hurting someone else, then you've not gone too far. So before you start to criticise the lives that others lead, take a good look in the mirror and be sure of what you see. They say that in his younger days he'd loved another man, and what went on between them no one there could understand. There was whispering amongst the women, hard talk amongst the men, but the curtains of old Joe's house were never pulled again.
Everybody must be fair.
Thank you.